Hi, I'm Lula Ainge, psychologist and researcher. Welcome back to Psychologically Speaking, a podcast all about human behaviour, bringing together fascinating research insights and real-life experiences. This season, we're exploring goals with our guests, and we'll be following them into the new year to see how their beliefs, behaviour and actions shape those intentions. I'm very pleased to welcome my next guest, Duncan Catterall-Mason. He's a director and producer specialising in animation and visual effects. He's worked across a range of industries. This includes Cadbury, Starbucks and Bugatti. He's got a cult following for his work on alternative music videos as a director. We talk about his goal to bring his ability to create worlds through animation, visual effects and storytelling to clients for their concert and event visuals. Tell me a little bit about who you are and when you first went into freelancing.
So I'm Duncan Catterall-Mason. I have been freelance for quite a lot of my career. So I've been working in filmmaking and animation for about 16 years now. I graduated into the 2008 financial crash. So I'd kind of done stop motion animation as a kid, started working on short films in my teens and made my first full length movie at 19. It was a weird environment to graduate into. I ended up sort of doing multiple jobs and that allowed me to kind of build up film equipment. I didn't go immediately into animation despite doing it all the way up to that point. Over time, I started doing more animation type work for people. So I kind of entered a film studio in about 2011, having been making music videos and stuff like that, they liked what I did. That brought me around to working on more commercial things, and the digital world was emerging at that point. And so I ended up coming up to Birmingham to work for a automotive director, a guy called Al Clark, who does some of the kind of fastest moving commercials in the kind of car sense. I was doing drone and visual effects work, but I was then also simultaneously working on freelance animation projects and motion design projects for the likes of Cadbury and Starbucks. Some of that work's quite heavily under NDA, but one project that is public, I'm quite proud of, I did the 2018 centenary, World War One centenary for Cadbury, and that was massive. So I think that was seen by about 3 million people.
Wow.
I was also doing visual effects at the same time for the Bugatti stuff, which is, you know, the 0-300 film, I think it's on about 16 million views at this point. I've been around the block. I can physically film. So while I'm now mainly working in 3D, those methods of filmmaking are now being utilized in a way that, because the tool is getting so good in terms of replicating realism, you then can introduce things that you normally only use, you know, the lighting techniques you can use in the real world now apply. And so the transition over to that medium, and that's one of my strong suits, is being able to light something well and getting things into that digital world. You can then, you could do things that maybe aren't safe or physically impossible by bringing things into that world. I've been doing stuff in the last year with a lot of digital doubles. So in my last workplace, I needed to be able to take the CEO and put them into the Matrix and do the bullet time scene for their AGM.
Wow.
So the ability to, the ability to just sort of take someone, put them in a scenario like that. You know, I decided to go down that route rather than kind of filming it, because filming it, you would have to have gun permits and stuff. I'll just have to do one of the things that's considered one of the hardest things to do, recreate a human face that was extremely recognizable within that company. So that was a real milestone this year, getting people to understand why you're doing these things when it's quite technically out there. It's not just using tech for tech's sake. It's about using this stuff to create the worlds you want to create. So the project I'm working on right now, I can say that it's not human characters. There's some objects in it that wouldn't normally be kind of walking around.
I was catching as you were talking, though. It sounds like you get feedback around how well your work's landed.
Yeah, I think it's easy to sort of highlight the things that done particularly well. Some of the stuff that I'm proudest of hasn't necessarily found a huge audience and or has not necessarily been released publicly. So I've done stuff, yeah. I've done a lot of stuff for different companies, GMs and things like that, where they're talking about details that we can't really put that thing online. I've done stuff where I've really put in the effort, but, you know, people haven't released it in the right way. So it hasn't done well. And, you know, it can really vary. It doesn't stop you from being proud of the project or proud of the people that you've worked with on those projects. It's massive.
So you've described yourself predominantly to me as freelancing.
Yeah, I went back to freelancing recently for a dream project. I've been freelance for 16 years. What I've done has varied quite a lot. So I was always directing projects and editing projects and stuff like that. And I've moved over to kind of the animation space. I'll sometimes work within another production company, or I'll set up my own small team for a project.
And talk me through your thought process and just a little bit about what kind of goal you're looking at.
I think it gives me a heavy level of accountability by coming on here to do it. And actually, you know, I've usually got any number of different crazy R&D projects on the run. So, but to focus in on a goal that's really for the business, with the mini budget thing, when that really affected sort of the economy for a lot of freelancers, especially in the creative sector. So I jumped for a bit into a company, and I built them a studio and was making films for them. And one of the things I was doing for them for like the last 3 years was their AGM. That was always big screen content. I'd done stuff for sort of big event launches that had cinema adverts, and I'd done things for launches sort of Getty Show on Sport. I'd done stuff for, I want to say it was the CEO of Rightmove. Always doing weird things to CEOs. I think I turned the CEO of Rightmove into a cyborg at one point. And this is back in the day. The last company I was working at, Teacher Active, a recruitment agency, they had these increasingly ridiculous AGMs. Ridiculous in a good way. Doing those kinds of animations, that kind of level of work, is something I kind of want to turn into a service. But the fundamental problem I have is that all of these I've done so far have been under wraps. There's not stuff I can really share. So to pitch that service into other people and go, I can do your event and concert visuals, when people need something high level for that, I can make all the animations, all of the intro sequences, all the visuals. You know, I was even doing artwork, a lot of hand drawn. Oh, well, I say hand drawn, digital artwork by hand. I'm sat in front of a big Wacom screen right now, I didn't have the confidence to do that many years ago. And then when I was working for them, I'd sort of done stuff for music clients and stuff like that, and slowly feathered in the fact that I could do my own art. And then I really got into it in a heavy duty way with those things. And they're always themed. So I think the first year we did musicals, the following year we did I. And so doing those different themes then kind of give you the creative constraints to do things in a particular style and a particular way. And I think now I'm back to freelancing. I want to do that sort of stuff as a service for people. And we're also making films for those as well, so where there were particular projects and things they wanted to highlight. So they had a really great diversity initiative there, and so we did a film for that, you know. So those are all kinds of things that I think I can kind of package up and do for people. It's a fairly premium service, because to do it the way I want to do it, I want to try and get a team of people around it. It did take me many months to do each one of these things. But I think having the ability to kind of outsource and bring in a few other people for key components of it, because if someone wants to do it in a particular style or wants to do certain things, I can then bring all of that together and bring all the right people together. And having, you know, worked with many talented artists and animators, as much as I can do quite a lot of stuff myself, being able to kind of bring in really good people and talented people to project is the best to do it in a more deliberate way. That's one of my own productions is what I want to do. So that's the big goal, is how I launched that. So what I've got at the moment is the outline for essentially a trailer for it. And it's going to be an entertaining trailer. So it's taking death by PowerPoint to a bit of an extreme and using animation to highlight a service that uses animations, different characters and things like that. So at the start, you've had an audience that's been killed off by a dull presentation. And then you've got different crowds. Yeah. And then you've got different crowds of people then enjoying the different visuals you're then displaying, to use as an example. But, you know, having recently done a bit of crowd simulation, I thought, well, okay, I'll use that. That's the big goal at the moment, is to launch that service. this is going to sound weird to say out loud.
Yeah.
One of my plans for doing freelancing this time around is to work for fewer people. I work far better kind of working for a distinct set of people rather than just doing hype, being able to have some real client care around making their projects a success and giving it the time that it needs is more important to me than working on lots and lots of little tiny bits and pieces. This would be the service to kind of get going alongside. Obviously, I go and freelance for other studios and things like that. And even with that, I've got new ways of working that I need to then demonstrate, because a lot of the stuff that I've been doing lately hasn't got an example that's public. And that's been a real constraint to my animation kind of side of things. Most people assume that I'm just a music video director and stuff if they go and look online, because those are the bits that are public.
So what you're describing there is taking your freelance business into a premium offering, almost like a boutique agency that works with hand-picked clients for longer periods of time, months. So you'd be with a client for a quarter of a year, if you like.
Yeah.
So what are the challenges of transitioning from where you are now into that model?
Yeah, so firstly is just demonstrating the fact that I do this stuff and can do it to such a level, and those initial kind of materials and trailers and things like that need to be super premium quality as well. So having something that would normally take months to make, and then also then demonstrating that, it's going to take some time to then create something that is that good. So that's challenge number one. Challenge number two is then just the kind of networking aspect of it. So there's a few people that I know that I'll probably get in touch with and say, hey, look, I'm doing this now. I've mentioned it to a few people. There's at least two companies I know that are aware that I'm thinking of doing it, including the company I used to work for. Depends if they'll have me back. We left on good terms. I think it's looking at people who are working, particularly in events. I've done stuff in the kind of music sector for such a long time. So it's all kind of a case of, it's a bit of a networking challenge.
Yeah, okay.
My biggest problem with networking is that I'm so hyper-focused on the project I'm working on at any given time that I forget to network, and or I don't people don't necessarily know what I'm doing or working on, and sometimes I can't say what I'm working on. So that's a really big challenge, getting people to know that I'm doing this stuff and meeting all the right people, and also having small kids at home as well. I can't just nip out in the evening and go to some kind of drinks thing. I am going to an animation event in Birmingham on the 26th, but I'm having to use my birthday as an excuse to get out of the house and get my mum to look after the kids while my wife head out. And I'm not super confident in person in social situations. I find it really hard so I find that stuff really hard. So getting over that and getting past that, yeah, can be a challenge.
That's really interesting. You're really talking about this idea of needing social proof. That's the kind of psychology marketing arena you're talking about. I need social proof. And how do I give social proof when a lot of my stuff is under NDA? And also part of your premium brand, presumably, will be that respectfulness of people's IP and all of that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If I say, is there an opportunity there, though, from what you've told me, you are clearly sought after and have been in demand, and you have done good quality work, so therefore people presumably talk well about you.
I don't think I've been credited correctly in a few areas, and that hasn't necessarily passed on. I think I have seen that sometimes you're seen as someone's sort of secret weapon. That's been the thing that's held me back most, is some of the secrecy around work that I've done. I remember one occasion where I was headhunted by someone, but it taken them a couple of years to work out who had done this particular project.
Right.
Because of the crediting on it or the lack of crediting. Because especially when you're doing stuff in the digital space, there's not a credit sequence at the end of that stuff. Some of the producers I know will help me get some gigs in a few places. Not everyone does. So that's something that this time around I need to be really mindful of. I think I was just kind of happy to take the money in the past, but now now I think I'm having to have a bit of a pricing structure on that stuff, because it actually costs me to make more of these projects, because I've got to take my own time to put my own personal projects out. And in the past I didn't do enough personal animations, but it meant that if that project then couldn't be released in a in the way that would credit me, then that's been a problem. So yeah, so that's been a big challenge.
Is there an opportunity with your new business model? Let's call it new business model. Is there an opportunity with that and with the contracts to get some support and advice on how you can get the best of both worlds when it comes to being credited and credited appropriately so that you can market yourself and you can say what you've done?
Yeah, I mean, I think contractually what I'm doing now is there's no discounts if it's under wraps. With this service in particular, I guess I don't mind that it's not going to go out, but actually what I'm doing is I'm building in the fact that, okay, that's then going to need to pay for me to do a couple of weeks here on some of my own projects that go out there. I've recognized that I need to do those things. I'm now working on a bunch of personal projects. They'll be quite good flagships for some of this other stuff. I'm going to probably launch a kind of animated band of my own to highlight a few different things that musicians could be doing and services that I do, because until people can see what this thing looks like, it's hard to really kind of get a grasp of it. And then there's just films I've wanted to make for some years that actually I've got a very good business reason to be doing those things rather than just going, oh, I'd like to do that someday.
You've talked about, I mean, you've worked in some really kind of niche areas. So automotive is one of those areas. And obviously you've done stuff with Cadbury and et cetera. When we're talking about this premium service, is there an ideal sector client, or is it an ideal money spent on, or kind of, are you going after premium brands?
There's a certain level of budget you'd probably have to have as a minimum. In terms of, there's not specific sectors. I don't think I've ever been tied too strongly to a particular sector. The funny thing about me working in automotive is I'm not a petrol head. I don't know if it helped me or not, but at the time I'm sort of, and then like when I've filmed celebrities in the past and like I'm completely clueless about who anyone is, it can make me more objective.
Yeah.
I just wish the music industry was doing a lot better than it is now, because I love working in that sector, but it's not as well funded as it could be. I think with this service, it's still about trying to do creative things for people, but it's also trying to have the same sort of emotional impact that they want to get out of their thing. Because at the end of the day, I want people to remember this stuff. And I think with some of the AGMs that I was doing, that was about making their staff feel valued.
Yes.
So that's kind of the angle on that. It's there has to be a certain level of budget, but I don't think I'm tying myself to a particular sector. The information I should be getting off the client should give all the messages they want to put out there to be an expert in their sector, unless there's something that I would create that would then cause a problem. So there's obviously certain ways. Looking back at the automotive stuff, you know, there's certain ways in which you need to try and show a car or not show a car, and that'll be the case for other products and things like that. But there's sort of a general level of skill and ability that should work across most things.
My line of inquiry here is more around, you have highlighted that networking is not something you get up raring to go to do each day, like a lot of people, I would imagine. And when you land at the networking event, small talk is obviously going to be the kind of thing that's going to cognitively take some time to prepare for. So my line of inquiry here is, if you know what types of people or what your focus is, then that makes that networking easier, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think because it's going to be events and concerts, that does kind of narrow it down to the types of people that you'd be contacting. Mm. So I'd probably look at large corporates or medium sized to large corporates that have got facility and events managers. So if they're putting on big events, do they have someone that does those visuals for them? Have they considered doing them in the way that I do them? You know, those are kind of the types of people that I'm going to be sort of looking out. So facilities and events managers on the kind of corporate side of things, and I'd have corporate concert visuals in the mix as well.
Yeah.
That then goes back to more of my sort of traditional market with the music side of things. You do generally try and work with the artists there directly if you can help it. You can reach out to labels and tour managers and things like that to see if there's something they've got in place.
A premium service, working with fewer clients, developing your own show reel so that you can give that social proof, getting yourselves in front of the right people at networking events so that you can talk about the things that you do and show your portfolio around. When does this service launch?
I've been telling myself January to launch.
Yes.
I need to launch some version of it by January, really. So I'm...
Why?
Financially, I need to as a business. So okay. I'm good to the end of the year with the project I'm working on, but I kind of need to start taking on some of those other things. Essentially, my plan B in the new year is to work for some of the other studios, and that's kind of a placeholder for this plan. So that gets me back to kind of working on small stuff. It'll be a couple of weeks here and there for different studios and bouncing between a lot of different clients, a lot of different projects. Whereas to do these, well, you know, it's a couple of months. So I'm going to do some other freelancing in between.
So 16, 17 years in the industry, Duncan, you're very tuned to the lead in time it takes to get work with some of the studios that you've been used to working with. So
it's interesting to think about the lead time. It's usually been quite a short turnaround because if they need a freelancer, there's a project that's about to happen. I have known bigger projects to sort of be aware of them maybe 3 months ahead, 4 months ahead. That's usually clients that I've already worked for. I've always had a split between doing my own projects and doing stuff for other studios. So the lead time can be longer for working for direct clients. They need to scope things out. Maybe they've put it into a budget somewhere. And then whether or not that budget gets approved, it can take a couple of months with that, if not sometimes even half a year for a direct client.
Where I'm heading with this is that, you know, that transition for once you launch, you've got two lead times that you're managing in your business. You've got short-term lead times or shorter term with other people doing work for their clients. And then you've got your longer term lead times. You've got some experience of both, which is really good. The other thing that I'm just going to kind of talk about is the resources that you've got available to you. So we would say that you already have a list of previous clients, right? Have you ever had a strategy around how and when you contact previous clients and what they know you're up to? I mean, how they know what you're doing this year or what you've been up to or what you can say you've been up to?
I've obviously got back in touch with a few different previous clients. The main client I'm working with at the moment was a previous client that reached out. I do tend to contact people. I think at the moment I'm in a bit of a funny place with that because I know that I need to send an updated showreel to a few people. I'm waiting for this project I'm working on right now to be out. I think people have seen a lot more of my motion design work in the animation space, but it takes me even deeper into the kind of world of character animation. So once that's out, that restarts conversations with a few people I've worked with. There's an amazing animation company I work with, and I want to show them what I'm up to at the moment. I can't. I want to be able to kind of do animations for some of the best people. So, that's quite a challenge.
So you're excited to show this client
where
you're at the moment. Will you be able to share that piece of work with them in the long term?
It will be. And that's one of the things that makes a dream project is and people will be able to see it and I will be able to talk about it.
So in terms of a launch date of you being able to talk about a very significant showreel or piece of work that you can talk about and perhaps thinking broader than just the one client, thinking who else? Would I let know about that and having your own strategy around how you're going to share that wherever you kind of show up? And that's another question, isn't it? Because every industry is different. For your industry, then, where is the place to be seen? Is it physically in networking events? Is it online? Is it word of mouth?
I used to find the best networking used to be filming. When you went with different freelancers, you ended up picking up a lot of contacts and recommendations that way. And I think some of the main clients that I ended up getting were through, you know, being on set That's been really good for word of mouth, but also working alongside those people at times, you're able to then recommend them for things and get them onto projects and stuff like that. But now I'm not really filming. It's just impossible for me to go and drive down the motorway and do some of the things I used to do with small children at home. So yeah, networking's hard. That's why I'm probably turning to the, and this is going to kind of your point with the research, I'm probably now turning to more of the online networks. Obviously getting on podcasts is also a good to try and meet people and see things. I've ended up sort of making contacts because I like listening to that podcast and I go and follow those people and pester them about how they've done something. Or obviously we're both on the Doing It for the Kids network, so that's, you know, that's early days on being on that network, but that's good from a kind of emotional support perspective. I don't know whether it's necessarily a source of clients for me particularly. It's definitely gonna be probably a source of people that I would bring onto a project. It's a lovely community to be part of, and I think that's one of the things as well. When you're a freelancer and you might work from home quite a lot, it can be quite isolating. So to be part of a network, it now feels more like there's a few peers and colleagues in a way that I don't feel like I necessarily had before, in the sense of, you know, if I'd just gone and shot a music video.
It's quite curious how the networks work, because I think for some people it is about, you know, being seen, people knowing you for your specialism, and then going, oh, that person can fill that need for my business, and they're in the community. And there was somebody in one of the communities who was working for a big brand, and they got in touch with me to say, can I put your name forward? Because I think they're working on something. They've been trying to get a researcher to do this and they can't find somebody. Those kinds of networks, we call them, psychologically, we call them loose ties, but this idea that these loose ties, they really do make a difference. That's to bring this back into more of a focus, is this idea that, you know, being clear on who your client is and where you're going to find your client isn't necessarily you getting straight in front of the client, but then some of those connectors. So you talked about facilities and events managers, but I wonder also if PR people are the types of people who might be pitching ideas and building up your network with some PR people who you know work on these kind of big campaigns. Having some time to sit and think about a strategy around that would be helpful. Behind all of that is then looking at your, almost your roadmap for your first 12 months of launch, which is to say, I launch at the point at which I can give social proof, potentially using the point at which you can talk about your latest pieces, your big show reel moments. And then thinking, what does the next 12 months look like? Giving yourself a really achievable place to be in terms of landing your first bigger client. And we've talked about probably taking up to 3 or 4 months to land that first client. So your first 12 months would look like maybe one client. And then after that, maybe two, and building up that way. So I think, you know, I would urge you to kind of think about how that balance is going to, you're going to start with more freelancing gigs and ramp down and then ramp up, or you play a gamble and say, I won't do any smaller pieces because I'm going to hold my space for the bigger things. There's some exploration there, isn't there?
I think it's probably going to be the former, where I'm probably going to be, you know, working more as a freelance for other people for a bit, and then try and gradually block in these projects. I think there's going to be some research I need to do around when a lot of people have their AGMs and things. I think it's very particular to those companies that I might want to go and try and work for. So I think some of my kind of marketing around, because I need to try and secure specific companies so I can try and work some stuff around that. I might even try and pitch by sending an animation specifically for that client. If they don't like it when it shows their brand, then they're not going to like the rest of it.
So Duncan, it sounds like you've probably got 2 or 3 companies in mind that you'd like to directly pitch to.
So there's a couple of companies I'd already try and work for. It's kind of a matter of timing whether or not it works for this year. For some of those ones, I'm acutely aware that one of those companies might have an AGM in the new year.
So you'd be pitching them for 2027 with great lead in time.
I also want to branch out and try and find some of those other people and not be completely tied on to what I've done before.
How are you going to manage your focus over the next 12 months?
The way that this is going to happen is the fact that I'm basically going to take most of December to do this. Once I've got a showreel, getting into a routine with outreach is a lot easier. In fact, I've kind of got the webpage kind of built, but sort of not published. But it's that fundamental thing, that showreel that goes with it, that trailer that goes with it is the thing. So I'm going to work on it in December. I've got part of a storyboard and I've got a voiceover done for it. So that's what we in the trade call an animatic. So it's a storyboard cut to the sound.
Yeah.
That does give me a structure to then build that up into the finished thing. I treat it like a kind of client project for that. But one that I've got to get done, I'd get into a routine each morning of trying to do some cold outreach. I think there's going to be a lot of cold outreach on this, if I'm honest. And we'll see when it comes to like having the custom branded things. I think it's worth me doing a few of those for a few key people, because that's what a lot of people do at the kind of agency level there and production companies. They will do pitches where they have to try and make a piece of work or something that looks pretty decent to get that higher value client, but it's worth it when they secure that business.
What is your delivery date for this initial showreel?
Before the Christmas holidays release, so probably the 20th of December. We're talking about a 30-second piece. However, it's multiple layers of animation, have a load of demos of what different screens would look like in different contexts, so you can kind of visualize what it would look like for them.
Here's your accountability that you asked for. Does that then sit on the website that you've already built?
At that point, it just gets posted everywhere on the main web page. It introduces the service, so it'll work on social media and stuff like that. Probably have to do a few different renders, so it works at different resolutions and shapes and things.
I'm not a marketing person, but that sounds like that's the start of your campaign, the long tail of your campaign around my brand's premium, who you stand for, where you're going with it, and that's where you start December the 20th, and then you're moving into next year where you're looking to target specific companies which you have in mind, which you've got written down, and look at getting their AGMs. That sounds like quite a specific goal. It's you've got two or three goals here. The first one is to get your product, your showreel out and into a format. And then the secondary goal, isn't it, is to target the ideal clients. One thing that we've not talked about is who are you using for support? You've got to do loads of things, but we're not infinite resources as humans. Have you highlighted any people or spaces that you can go to for support?
So one of my best friends is actually in the doing it for the kids network, so that's Fuchsia and I have started co-mentoring recently, and we can't hold each other to account on that, so that's there in terms of support. We're in completely different sectors, and I think this is what saying about being sector agnostic earlier, my thinking doesn't necessarily come from that sector, and sometimes some of the weird and wonderful things I chuck into my work are nothing to do with things that might be done in that at a given time. It might just be something I've figured out on my own and done my own R&D for, which does give me an edge. So Fuchsia is really good for those conversations. We were having them sort of more informally over the years at different times, just sort of, how's your business going? And it usually comes back to you need a contract. We're kind of keeping each other accountable. From a kind of doing the work kind of perspective, obviously I've been around for a while, so I've got a network of different freelancers and artists and animators, and you know, if you need people to do a sword fight, or you know, you've got all sorts of ridiculous people, you know, you're like, I can't wait till there's a project to do this. I think it took a while to get sword fighters on something, but we got there.
Wow.
So there's always like crazy different kind of, like at some point we'll need this for a project. And you've just got that kind of little back book, as they kind of call it.
Yeah.
Since I was a kid, I've always had, I used to organize rock concerts at my school. I had Nokia 3110 and this little tiny notepad, because you couldn't store phone numbers. And I'd fix almost every problem that I had by going through this little notepad of mine and finding the right number.
Tell me more about this side gig. Was this secondary school?
We had this amazing school theatre, normal comprehensive school. I grew up in Milton Keynes. I was in different metal bands and stuff like that at the time. And the easiest way to put on your own band is to put on a gig. I used to just get other, and we'd raise money for charity or for the school for different bits and pieces.
School sounds amazing.
So that was sort of an early kind of look into how to kind of put on productions. And that got me into kind of the networks of the different bands and things like that, which did, you know, come in helpful later when it was the music video time.
What's your equivalent of your little black book now, would you say?
I don't know if it's, obviously you just have your phone and contact details. And I think my brain's usually just got someone in the back of my mind for any given kind of situation. So it's possibly not down on paper anymore. It's just been internalized. It's been absorbed into my head. Missed phone.
It'd be quite curious from my perspective, as we've been talking. I mean, the notes I've made, just to kind of take you through, I've written down, you know, you're connected and you've worked in industries and you are somebody with lots of experience of freelancing and working around networks, etc. So you have this infinite network of people who know people who know people. And, you know, your creative possibilities and the ideas that you've got, you don't want to pin yourself into one particular niche other than your brand being premium. So I was just thinking, you know, there is a way here, isn't there, to kind of capitalize on all of those really networks and relationships, ensuring that they are the first to know about your new showreel. They're the first people to tell, I'm doing something different, even if they're not your client, because they might tell somebody else. And that was just what came to mind, really, is to go, you know, just to even sit and have an hour thinking about it.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I've probably got a bigger network in terms of sort of freelancers and other people I'd turn to bring into projects than I've necessarily got as a client base. I think the advantage of working for a few other studios and stuff in the past is that they just sort of get you they've brought in the client there, so you don't have to necessarily have that networking. And I don't think I was that strategic with it in the past as to, like, you know, I think I've learned now that you've got to demonstrate, like, this is what you'd use the animation for. I think there's a lot of talk now within the motion design community in particular about, you need to explain what this is to clients so they can understand what they're buying. Most clients aren't thinking motion design or animation. They've just got a problem they're trying to solve.
If you were to set yourself a specific kind of action around networking for 2026, what's that going to look like?
To actually have contacts and connections who would be willing to take these things, even if it isn't right now, but knowing more people. And then I think there's probably a wider network of people around it. So as much as, you know, spoken about PR people and facilities and events managers, think trying to find some of the wider network of that, because that, like you say, might kind of help that those connections.
What's the first step to do that?
I guess trying to find where some of those networks are living. There's different people who've got contacts and recommend different people, and some of these things are just so informal, so trying to tap into that. So
does that look like an email to someone, you know, to say, tell me about this? Or is it cold outreach?
It's going to be a bit of a mix. It's probably a smaller pool of people that I can contact directly that I already know. So I think there will be quite a lot of cold outreach to start with for a lot of this. But at the end of the day, you know, I want to take on, you know, four to six of these types of projects a year if I'm just doing this.
Yeah.
But there might be a concentration of those different AGMs into a particular time of the year where everyone decides to have, you know, we talk about conferences.
Yeah.
So it could well be that's why it needs to concentrate into those points in the year. And then those other parts of the year, I do the other things that I do, whether that's making films and the other stuff that I do. I think it's going to be a lot of colder outreach. I'm psychologically already prepared for the rejection or just complete silence that will come with cold outreach, because I just need to tell myself, I only need to get a couple of clients here. That will whittle down to, like, what kinds of people am I enjoying working with? Are these sectors compatible with what I do? I'm preparing myself for a lot of rejection, but I only need to get those few key people, get those few conversations in, because I want to make sure that whoever I'm working with is getting the proper amount of time and service from me.
Okay, so let's take it from the top then. Your wide goal, the goal, is to move your business into a premium service, working with 4 to 6 premium clients a year. To get there, you've got a constraint, which is being able to use social proof. So your response to that is to launch a showreel, which you can do by the end of December, and then to market that and promote it during January and onwards. What does success look like for you in March? What would success look and feel like?
I think success would be having at least one client lined up for that. But it wouldn't necessarily have to be that I'm working on it right there and then. But yep. It'd be nice if I was.
It's a strong lead.
Yeah. I think strong leads is what I'm looking for in March.
Yeah. Okay.
I would want to have started that kind of process of outreach and got some kind of positive response to it, securing one of the previous clients that I've got in mind would be a great one as well. But I wouldn't want to guarantee that. So I'm intentionally pessimistic.
You talked about that mixed approach, which is cold outreach, high rejection, response anticipated. And then you've got the warm outreach, which is to reconnect with previous clients and say, hey, I'm doing this, but not just with clients, but with network. And it's just really starting to get yourself known. So that's success for March. Are your children old enough to be in school? Yeah. So July, we're just entering that free fall of summer holidays and juggling, etc. So what does success look like for you in July?
Success would be not having to work in August.
Okay.
That might be incompatible with some of the clients, so we'll see. And I'm kind of prepared for that. Success for me is a very different thing to, I think, what it might look for other people. As much as these things need to be paid for and there's money involved and, you know, it's a premium service to do it well and to make it sustainable, at the end of the day, I want to make sure that success factors in the rest of my life. So success to me means that I'm not burnt out and that I'm able to do these things, so that I think success is making things that look good, that work well for the client without completely burning me out. That needs to be making enough money to make it sustainable. It needs to be able to fund some of the other R&D stuff that I do.
So you've gone through your year. You have transitioned. You have picked up a premium client or two, because we said, you know, the 4 to 6 might not be entirely achievable in year one of pivoting, but... And you're well on your way to your third client, shall we say. How's success feeling this time next year?
I think I'd want it so that it became, I can't think of a better way to phrase it than it's become more of a pipeline. It's a routine. So I had this in the past when I was doing a lot more music video stuff, where, you know, I'd have people coming along and signing up at things because they'd heard of me and they knew my reputation. So those people that were just coming to me without me having to reach out. And I think that's probably where I'd like to be by November, but it might still be too early come next November for that kind of thing. And that might take a couple of years to establish where the people that I should be talking to are.
Okay, yeah.
And that network of strong leads is a much, much stronger pool of people. I think I'd be a lot clearer on how to approach those people as well. I think it's going to be trying out a few different methods to get people's attention for this stuff and see what works and what works in terms of the right kind of client.
At the start, and you were talking about really looking at a more premium level. So your goal is really about getting a strong lead strategy for the year. So the vision, the mission is one thing, but perhaps the goal is something quite different. And I think it's wonderful that you've got this co-mentoring already in place, because that's where you could really harness the power of co-mentoring to be teasing out what that looks like. And that strong lead strategy ties in with the creative side of doing things for people to give them a bit of a flavour and feel, because it's not just cold outreach then, is it? It's I think you're talking about more tailored strategy of outreach. That would be really fascinating to think about. I think what I would perhaps suggest at this point is to think about this, listen back to this conversation, and then firm up a little bit more what your goal is.
Yeah, I've been making some notes here.
I love it. I did speak to Darren last week, and I think you'll find his episode really intriguing. He starts out talking about all the work he's done this year, learning about sales and sales techniques and stuff. And I think that would be a really interesting person for you to have a conversation with, because you're both creatives, how we do sales and how we do think about leads, etc. You know, it is a skill we have to add on to our core business. I will check in with you. I will set up a session for you in January where you come together with a couple of the other goal setters, and you'll be able to put into other people's goals as well.
Sounds good.
Thank you so much for being a guest. I've really enjoyed today's conversation. People are going to really enjoy following your journey next year.
Thank you. Likewise. Thanks so much for having me.
If you've been listening and thinking, I'd love to feel clarity about my own goals, I've created something to help you begin. Head to www.leelaange.co.uk/coaching and download your goal reflection log. This helps you to uncover what's driving your goals and that gives you the space to understand if it's the right goal in the first place. So if you're serious about entering the new year with direction, confidence and a psychology-backed plan, this is where it starts. And when you're ready for deeper work, you'll find all the details of my one-to-one sessions there too. Thank you for listening to Psychologically Speaking with me, Leela Ainge. And a favour, I've set my own goal to double the number of folk who listen to this podcast each week. Here's your invitation to share this episode with two friends or contacts from your podcast platform of choice with the question, what's your goal for 2026?